And I was struggling a little bit this week and actually communicated to staff around this idea that I said, man, I feel like I could almost take the sermon I just preached on Sunday. I could take everywhere where we referenced children, simply put in youth or teenagers, and like, boom, my sermon's written. Let's just keep going. But life isn't really that simple. I had something happen this week that kind of stopped me in my tracks. And it was morning time. We were trying to get out the door. And Mia, our four-year-old, had come across a flashlight. Now, as soon as I saw her, I knew what was going on. And so sure enough, she ran into the bathroom. I thought she was like going to potty before we left. But I noticed that she started like messing with the rug in the bathroom was kind of in her way, and the stool that we pulled to the sink was kind of in her way. And I knew what was happening. She was trying to get everything situated in the bathroom the way it needed to be so she could go in and turn the lights off and be in the bathroom alone with the flashlight. So I kind of popped in because we literally are like trying to get out the door. So I kind of popped in and I was like, "Hey, baby," I was like, what are you doing? And she's like, I'm trying to move, you know, and she's kind of grunting and struggling. She's like, trying to move this stool, you know? And I was like, "Baby, are you trying to get it dark in here so you can turn on your flashlight?" And she said, "Yes, I am." So thankfully in that moment, I wasn't like super stressed to leave or anything. So I was like, "All right," I was like, "let me help you." So I moved some of the stuff. I straightened the rug. I moved the stool out of the way. And so I was about to turn the light off and close the door. And I asked her, I said, "Do you want me to leave or do you want me to stay in here with you?" And she thought for a second and she said, "No, I want you to stay in here with me. I want us to be together." I was like, "Okay." So we closed the doors. We turned the lights off. Boom, she turned the lights on, or the flashlight on, and there we were together in the dark bathroom. I couldn't get away from that image as I was thinking about today, because today we're talking about youth, we're talking about teenagers, we're talking about this area of life that is for us, some of us adults, an enigma. Some of us as teens, we're just trying to struggle to get through right now. But I couldn't get away from this little image of my four-year-old who was saying to me, "Daddy, for now I want you to stay with me. Let's be together, because I know a day is coming when I'm going to ask the proverbial question, do you want me to be with you or do you want me to go out? I know one day she's going to say, no, I want you to leave. I know that day is coming." Some of you parents, you already know what I'm talking about. I'm going to go ahead and call her out. I love her so much, Andy. But I already had Andy in middle school. I dropped her off the other day, and I rolled the window down, and I love to just roll the window down and say, "Baby, I love you. Have a great day, you know. Don't pass gas in class," you know, stuff like that. And on this particular day, middle school, you know, like 3 weeks into middle school, she just stood there, and she looked at me, and she said, so finally I pulled away, you know. In that moment, she was saying to me, "Daddy, I don't want you. I want to be able to turn the flashlight on. I want to be by myself." And I had to respect that request. It's been said that teenage years are ridiculously crucial and hard and awkward. One of my favorite quotes is by a teenager. It says, "I know already by looking at those ahead of me that this is the last stage of my life where I will be happy to hear the phone ring." In other words, teens, is when you get old like us, old and crusty, when the phone rings, you just assume something's wrong. Somebody's in trouble. There was a time in my life, truly, when I took great pride in the amount of knowledge I had around youth culture. So before I came to Centerpoint, before I got gray, I was a youth pastor. I had like 12 years under my belt in youth ministry, and I took pride in giving an amount of my time and attention to understanding youth culture. I would listen to what they were listening to. I would watch what they were watching. I would try to have a conversation with them because I knew as a youth pastor, as soon as I got out of that subcultural reality, I was going to be lost as a youth pastor, not able to communicate with them. Now, 2 years ago, I drove fourth and fifth grade boys to camp. I realized two and a half years ago that I was no longer privy to the language that was going on in that particular subculture. I mean, these guys were having language in the back of my car, and they might as well have been speaking French, right? I don't have a clue what they
they were talking about, what they were saying. It's like, guys, can we talk about Andy Griffith? Right? Can we talk about Green Bay Packers? Let's talk about Beverly Hills 90210. You guys know about that. Like, nothing's going on here.
And even though I took great pride back then, I realize I'm out of the game now. And unfortunately, I think most of us adults, we are out of the game. I just want to read down this list. Teens, I'm not pretending like this is the coolest stuff to you guys. Don't understand that, okay? I'm not standing up here like this is what the teens really like. But adults, if you were to hear just these real quick, would these mean anything to you? Avengers Endgame, Naomi Scott, Crazy Rich Asians,
Riverdale,
13 Reasons Why, Stranger Things, Shawn Mendes, Why Don't We,
5 Seconds of Summer.
Does that mean anything to some of you?
Some of it.
Adults?
Yes.
Okay. That's good. You have a teenager. You better stay on top of that. One teenager once said, I think the hardest part about being a teenager is dealing with other teenagers. The criticism, the ridicule, the gossip, the rumors. I haven't really forgotten what it's like to be a teenager and how much it sucked.
Yeah, I just said
suck
from the pulpit. My bad.
Sorry, Mom. My mom's here today. I threw out this challenge last week to us. Could you imagine a church that didn't have a children's ministry, but instead functioned as a body of Christ that ministered to children? That was one of the challenges I felt this past week. I could just apply to you. Now, I think I can still safely do that. Could you imagine a church that doesn't simply have a youth ministry, but in fact has a church body that ministers to youth? What would that look like? Well, the first thing I wanted to do was to pull back and ask some questions of our teens. And so I got some text messages sent out, you know, understanding how to communicate is different. So when I wanted to gather input from children, I sent emails to parents, right? When you're dealing with teens, you can sidestep the parent. You just send the teens a text and you get directly from them, right? Mom and dad can't, like, filter these responses. So I asked the question, what's currently bringing you joy right now as a teenager? Hanging with friends, socializing, laughing together, being able to make memories, spending time with them, being reminded of God's love. What's the worst part about being a teenager? Having more homework, being at school longer in the afternoon, homework and the stress that I get from it, the pressure of managing your time for school, family, and friends, all the stress that is involved with school, especially the homework being so time consuming, being a good friend, getting enough sleep. And I quote, I don't get enough sleep these days. We noticed from last week for the children, and now this week for the teens, school, at least as they report, is proven to be one of the biggest stresses in their life. Maybe something's haywire right now. But you got to get smart so you can make a lot of money so one day you can have the right job. Welcome to the real world, teens. That's what really matters in life. Get smart, get a job, make a lot of money.
Says who?
You understand your pastor's a little sarcastic, right? What do you love most about Centerpoint? I love how everyone builds each other up. I love when Pastor Fabi preaches on Wednesday nights. I love the staff and my friends and the way they teach about God. It's a church I can really understand. I like the fact that we're really close and we have opportunities to bond with each other. I love how the church tries to get to my generation. I love how our generation is involved. I love how I have role models that I need to help me understand my spiritual journey. Now, that last one struck me. And when I realized this week where I was going to be going with that particular quote with you, I honestly got a pit in my stomach. There are times where I'll give you a disclaimer. I'll say, hang on, what I'm about to say sounds really bad, but don't kick me, you know, like that kind of thing. And my wife, even she'll say to me, like, don't disclaim your message. Just get up there and preach it, you know. Deal with it. I got up in the pit of my stomach this week when I read that quote, and I realized I was going to be going where I was going to be going after that quote, because I haven't served in a church that has struggled as hard as we struggle to get adults in our youth.
consider appointing a pastor.
Needs to be real with you for a second. I've served a congregation in Kansas City, Missouri, another congregation in Kansas City, Missouri, another congregation in Clarksville, Tennessee, and I've been at Centerpoint. This is my fourth church. This church proves to be the most difficult of any of my previous four congregations to get adults who are in the pew to commit to coming alongside teenagers and loving them and living life alongside them and learning their language and giving their Wednesday nights to them and giving their Sunday mornings to them and giving their Friday nights to them. I was very blessed when I read that one response that said the role models with which I get to live life have helped me along my journey. Because there are times that it's been a struggle. And I realized in that moment why I couldn't simply take last week's message and simply insert youth. You see, last week I threw out this challenge. What if we didn't just have a children's ministry? What if we had a church body that ministers to children? In fact, there are about 125 of you that make youth ministry happen week in and week out. Children's ministry happen week in and week out. About 125 of you throughout the year that make children's ministry happen. I get it. Children are easier than teenagers. But here's my question for you. Why don't we, every Wednesday night and every Sunday morning, have 25 adults back here ready to welcome and love and spend time with teenagers? Why don't we, at every camp and mission trip, service opportunity, other fellowship events, fundraisers, why don't we have 25 adults who have gathered around this group of students to love them and walk alongside them and encourage them and strengthen them? And I know the answer. I think the answer is that largely we're fearful. See, parents, we don't understand the language. We don't understand the group of students that are huddled around one cell phone and they've created this kind of barrier and they've said to you, if you have any gray hair at all, you're not welcome here. I get that. But I'm going to tell them, the teenagers this morning, even when they're huddled, even when they're laughing and they're joking and they're ha-ha, and you're on the outside, they actually want to be engaged by adults. I've told teens in the Center Point in the past, the best thing you can do right now in your young life is learn how to engage adults in adult-like conversation. And I don't mean you have to talk about adult things. We don't want you to talk to us about bills and growing old and hair color and stuff like that, right? But talk to us like adults. Talk to us like teenagers. Let us engage you. And this morning, I'm not putting the onus on the student at all. I'm putting the onus on the adults in the room. At this age of the game, students should be continuing to grow their roots deep, intertwined with the church body, so that those students might then go out and test the wings with which they've been given to go live life and experience the world that they're about to inherit from us. We need more adults who are loving and willing and ready and available to come alongside teenagers in this church body and in this community. One of my favorite youth writers says this, forgive the lengthy passage, but I want you to hear all of it. Youth are not blank slates, and Christianity is not words. That may seem obvious until you seek to share the Christian faith with young people. Then you may notice your first impulse involves words. What will I say? What book should I read? What answers will I give? What discussion should I evoke? What blanks within youth people need filling? In sharing the faith with youth, most of us think about the words and the empty spaces. If we go to seminary or step inside a Sunday morning worship service, we're immersed in words. A newcomer to these settings might easily assume Christianity is words. It's reading, memorizing, lecturing, preaching, and writing. It's books, newsletters, worship bulletins, words, words, words. But the central problem in sharing the Christian faith with young people doesn't concern words. It's deeper than that. The real crisis facing those of us who seek to share faith with youth is this. We don't know how to be with young people. We don't know how to be with our kids. We know how to entertain them. We know how to market to them. We know how to test them and statistically measure them, but we've forgotten how to be with them. As a result, today's youth have become more and more isolated, alienated, and left to fend for themselves within the molesting arms of the corporate media culture. This isn't just my opinion. It's the conclusion of every major study on adolescent development over the past 15 years. Consider the words of Kara Miller of the Research Institute, possibly the largest researcher of adolescent development and behavior in North America. Here's her quote. Study after study in the field of youth development makes it clear that the single most important thing that can make a positive difference in the life of a young person is the presence of a caring adult. In spite of that, research shows that most young people don't have enough caring adults in their lives. I'm so struck by that statement. The most positive thing that could happen in the life of a young person is to have even just one adult in order to make a positive difference, and most young people don't have enough caring adults in their lives. She said it only takes one, and most don't even have. Sometimes I'm fearful of reading studies and all that kind of stuff because I realize you take a large swath at the nation or the world, and then you try to bring it into a church like Centerpoint, and you go, well, here's the issue. We know that there are three issues that plague young people, and some of these haven't changed over the course of time. How to build and maintain healthy relationships. You know, this generation appears to be more connected than any generation, and by and large, through social media, they are disconnected, but teens today still report that they feel socially isolated, alienated, and lonely. Despite our social connectedness, we live in a world of young people who still feel lonely, and there's no lonelier place to be lonely than in a group of people. A church, perhaps, a school, a family. We know that there's stress, high stress, due to high impact life choices that they are facing. Homework, you've already heard that one. College, career, future, family. We know that there are issues of sexuality. Not a single teen that I polled over the last week and a half reported anything sexual to me. They think I wasn't a teenager at some point or something. I get it. They band together. And I don't send Pastor Dwayne anything like that. But we know that the issues of sexuality plague this generation. I asked our teens one last question. I asked, what are their greatest concerns about the future? Now, this struck me because this is not some national swap or poll. This is not some random kid that I pulled in off the street. These are students who sit in these chairs each and every week and make their way back to our youth center on Wednesday nights and Sunday mornings, who are at our camps and on our mission trips and at Parents Night Out, and they are actually loving and serving in the life of this church. I asked, what are your greatest concerns about the future? That I will stop growing with God. That my dreams won't live up to what I want. That I won't get married happily. That I won't be successful. That I won't have a career that brings me joy. That I won't make God and my family proud. What are your greatest concerns about the future? That I won't be able to start a family? That I'll have trouble getting in and being in college, that I won't have good friends when I am adult, that my parents will die too early. That church sounds to me like a group of young people that need loving, caring, encouraging, supportive brothers and sisters in Christ who are older than they are, coming alongside them and strengthening them. And blessing them and serving them. You You know whose job that is, Centerpoint? It's our job. It's not the public school's job. It's not the private school's job, even if it's a Christian school. It's our job as the body of Christ to not just have a youth ministry, but to be a church body that ministers to youth. What would it look like for us to create a safe, loving, authentic space where teens can continue to intertwine their roots with these large, with this larger body of Christ, so that teens might be able to go out and test their wings as they explore their newfound freedom of dating and driver's license and jobs and future career choices? What would it look like for us as a church to commit to coming alongside our students in such a way that when their roots are too shallow and they fail, they come to a place of embrace. And that when their wings tire out and they fall, they come back to a place of embrace. What would it look like for us to be a grace-filled community that's ready to walk alongside our teenagers to love them to the kingdom? Sebastian read this word for us this morning. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. I tipped my hand last week a little bit because I told you that every day that's a good day and we're kind of going and doing and running on all cylinders. I like to issue Proverbs 3, 5, and 6 as a blessing to my own girls. Pastor Javi and Bobby and I this week had a conversation with the staff and we were talking about this conviction around youth ministry. The goal of youth ministry is not Christian teenagers. The goal of youth ministry is Christian adults who are passing on the faith to future generations. So even when I bless my own children around Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, I can take this same blessing and I can apply it to every teenager that's in our community of faith. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Commit to the Lord. Everything you have, everything you are, everything you hope to be, commit to Him. Trust in Him with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. Don't put your faith, your hope, your security in your own understanding. Don't lean back on yourself. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Everything you are, everything you hope to be, everything you will become. Don't lean on your own understanding because sometimes your roots are not intertwined. Sometimes your roots don't go deep enough. Sometimes your wings will get tired. But in all your ways, if you acknowledge Him, confess Him, obey Him, He will make your path straight. It's not a guarantee. It's a hope that's contained in a promise. If you will honor Him, love Him, serve Him, obey Him, greater than you honor and love and serve yourself, or honor and love and serve your peers, honor and love and serve your culture teams, if you obey Him and follow Him and trust in Him with everything, your life will be straight. Even when it's difficult, even when it's hard, even when all you want to do is cry, even when you're depressed, even when you're struggling to make ends meet, even when the only question you have for God is why, your road will be straightened out by the Lord who loves you. Teens, I tell you that today so that the adults in this room can overhear that, because even adults, we tend to lean in on ourselves, trust ourselves. We know what we want to do. We know what we want. We know what we want out of life. Center point, we have work to do as it relates to ministry of the young people in this body and in the community around us. And thankfully, God has blessed us with some incredible leadership in this area. We've got to grow so that we continue to go to the 80,000 young people under the age of 18 who live within a 10-mile radius of this building. Did you hear me? The 80,000 young people who live within a 10-mile radius of this building. God has blessed this church with two incredible individuals, Pastor Javier and Pastor Fabiano. They're going to come today. They're going to close us out around their heart for youth ministry, their love for students, and how youth ministry fits within the broader context of the life of this church. We are blessed to have them in our midst, but it's not a job they can do on their own. Are you with me? Say, uh-huh. Everybody put your hands together. Show your love for Pastor Javier.
Good morning, church.
Good morning.
I'm super excited to be here worshiping the Lord with you. And this morning, we just want to share something with you. It's like, if you know me, you know that I'm kind of afraid of little kids, okay? But after I see the pictures that one of the kids draw by me, I think I scare them too. It's not only me, I scare them too, so now I understand why. It's, you know, all time. But the question is here, I want to share with you is why we have a heart for this ministry. Why we love to work with teens. Why when a lot of people think that they are really loud. Why when they don't listen. Why when sometimes some of them, they stink really bad. Why we like to be with this ministry with sometimes they walk and they talk and they say and do things. They're really like weird. Why we want to be in a ministry with a lot of the kids and the students, they're awkward. And you just don't know what to say, what to do. You want to go and hug them, and they look at you like, oh, no, don't touch me. And then sometimes you don't want to touch them. They come all sweat, and they want to be with you. And they just, you know, and it's hard. One day, one morning, they're super happy. They want you to be next to them and walk beside them. And then the next day, they don't even want to look at you. Why do we want to be working in a ministry like this? We want to share them. One of the reasons is because we understand that during that time of our own life was not easy. At least for me, in that age, in that time of my teenage years, I was already abused in many ways, including the sexual abuse. And in that time, there was nobody around me to show me love and to tell me, Fabi, it doesn't matter what happened when you were little. It doesn't matter about your past. It matters that Jesus Christ loved you. You don't need to be perfect to be part of a church. You don't need to be perfect. You just need God. Was nobody around me to tell me and ask me, Fabi, how are you doing? How are you feeling? For real. I was a pastor kid. And when you're in that position, they expect so much from you all the time. You need to be showing that your family is perfect, that you are okay, that you know every single Bible verse in the Bible, that you know all the stories, that you know how to dress up, how to talk, how to walk, everything. But nobody stopped and asked the question, Fabi, why are you acting this way? Why are you wearing those clothes that are not appropriate? Fabi, why are you doing those things? And they're like, why? Nobody. Everybody was just judging me. And everybody expects sometimes in a youth ministry that you look at them and they're different and they're loud, they're crazy and all that stuff. But how many times you stop and actually take the time to sit with them and ask questions that really matter? Not just judging them. And that's the reason why we love this ministry so much, because in my time, I was desperate for at least one adult. I was part of that number. I was the team that was not even one adult to show me that life was worth more than just come to church every Sunday and Wednesday. I was there. I was there every Sunday. But I was feeling lonely. And that age, I didn't have nobody to tell me what's the best decision to make. And I make a lot of wrong decisions, a lot of wrong choices, and I know I disappoint a lot of people in my life. But I was so full of hate and pain. I was completely against everything that has to do with church, with pastors. My dad was one of them, and I was like, I'm never gonna marry a pastor, never. So for me to be called pastor was in the beginning was not something that like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? Why? Really? They're calling me pastor? I mean, maybe that person that for some of the teens as a kid that I was thinking about my pastor, that I was thinking about other people that use this space just to stay and talk, but actually they're not living the life how the Bible's telling us to live. So for me, it was really hard in that state of life. And that's why when I was growing up, I'm like, what are you going to do in my life? What are you going to do? I want to be a doctor. I want a year of medicine school. And this is what I'm going to do. And you know what was crazy? I want to work with dead people. Because I'm like, I know they're not going to hurt me. I'm just going to let the family know what happened, why they're in that table. That was my dream. I was so afraid of leaving people that I didn't want to do nothing with them. And then I received the calling to work with students, and in the beginning it was hard, but I'm like, no, because I remember that ministry, it was empty in my life, and I want to be part of that person, the loving adult. They're going to be walking beside some of the students. We want to have a ministry that is not only with a lot of kids on Wednesdays and Sundays. We want to have a ministry that challenges the students, That they feel like they're not only want me to be here, they have expectation and not need to be perfect. It's just to live life together, to show the love so that when you receive love, you have a pool, like you have something to share with others. We want to show our students that we care, that they matter, so that when they're outside in the school, they don't need to pretend. But we need to start here in the ministry. If we teach our students that they don't need to pretend, they need to be what God is calling them to be, when they're out, they're going to be sharing that. And we're going to be transforming, we're going to be part of something that's going to change in the school, in our community, in the United States, in other countries. But everything starts here. So why? Because we love them. Because we care about them. And my experience at that age was not that good. But how we treated was different. And we also want to share that with you.
Pastor Fabi said at one point this week, should we do the translation thing? I was like, nah, I don't think so. Do you guys realize why? She's got a lot of passion. You know, like Fabi said, my upbringing was a little bit different. My experience was a little different. At 7 years old, I gave my heart to Christ. 10 years old, we found this beautiful body, this beautiful church that really we just kind of fit into, and they began to love us. At age 13, my dad left our family. From one night to the next, he just disappeared. In that moment, the church, this body of believers, became my family. They were pivotal to me and my brother, to my mom in many ways. The church educated me. They protected me. They loved me. Now, I know tribe is not exactly the same, and what Fabi's story is Fabi's story, what my story is my story. Each student that we have encountered over these years here at Centerpoint, everyone has a story, and it's a little bit different, but there are parallels, there are common threads between all of us. And in that age, that time, these teenage years, there are so many life-altering events. My heart, my calling gravitates towards them. That is part of why we call this ministry ours. This is why we have such a heart for it. So many things that our students require, and hopefully not just, there's not just a few people thinking about them, but the whole body of Christ. That's how it worked for me. There was no way that Harry Dietrich, that Esther Dietrich, Pastor Patrick Pierre, Rosa Pierre, Raphael Rupert, Cindy Rupert, there's no way that they could have done this on their own with Javier Rojas or the hundreds of other students that eventually became part of that impact youth group at Times Square Church. There was a whole body of believers behind us, standing in the gap every day.
Why we love our students, not only our ministry, just our students, because they are unique. Each of them are completely different. We were preaching this last Wednesday about how can we make a good dish, right? I don't know, what is your favorite food? You know that mine is soup. I love soup. So soup, they need a lot of ingredients. Not heavy soup, okay? Not heavy soup. Which one to use a good example here, okay, honey? Okay. So I love soup. So when you want to make a really good soup, you need to put a lot of ingredients in there, a lot. You can't just put salt, pepper, and a little bit of potato and carrots. That. No, you need a lot of stuff. So at the end, even if there's some stuff that you don't like to eat, the flavor of that soup is amazing and unique, right? So I don't know you, but when a grandma or mom, they give you a recipe to follow up and make the same soup or the same dish, sometimes you do it and you're checking, you're like, oh, I don't have that. Well, but I can use this. Oh, wait, I can use this. And you start like making your own recipe. You're not following instructions. You think you are, but then you choose what to put in that, right? So we were preaching with the students that that's how we are. Each student is one of those ingredients. And to make something good, we need to accept that we need that ingredient. We need to love them. Because if it's not, the soup is not going to be complete. Each of our students are unique. Some of them are really tall, another one is really short. Some of them are really loud, another one is super smart. Some of them, they don't even know what math is. But that's okay, because I don't like math either. But I'm saying is like, each of them, they're completely different. They need different things, and we love them, each of them. Why? Because we're preparing a place to church. We need each student to make a good soup. But we're not talking only the students that we're here. We need to reach out to those students that are outside. And they're unique. And they need to be part of a church. They need to be part of this body. They need to know that we need them. I need my ears. I need every part of my body to be able to walk, to be able to go places, to be able to do what God is calling me to do. As a church, as a youth ministry, we need all of the students, all of them, to be part of this. So we can't just say like, oh, because you don't know how to do this, you're not welcome. Just because you're different, because you're this and that. No. I'm part of the Super Central Point Church. You know my accent, and you know you love it. You know, I'm unique. Sometimes you understand what I'm saying, sometimes not, but who cares? I'm unique. I need to get better in English, and you need to get better in Spanish. Why? Why we love our students? Because they're not the future. They're the present, just for now. My kids are not going to become my kids in the future. They're my kids right now, and they're dealing with things, heavy stuff right now. So I need you as a parent. I need you in my kids' life now, not in the future. I need you now. Our students, they're having like, maybe they don't want to admit it, but they're walking every day with a sign to say, love me, pay attention to me, don't judge me, care for me. They don't like to say all the time because, you know, at that age, you know what you're doing. You don't want to listen to anybody. You want to do whatever you want and you feel that day. But actually deep inside, because you remember that time when you're pretending that everything was fine, but actually not. When every time that you go to school, you need to put a mask and you fake that everything is fine and you take a picture and you have to make sure that everything that's around the picture is perfect so you can publish that picture. Because if actually people come to your room, they're going to see that it's a mess. If some people come to your life, they're going to see that your life is not perfect. But this is teaching our kids to pretend to be something they are not, just to receive a like. But why they're so desperate looking for these things outside is because something is missing. And maybe it's here. Maybe it's home. Maybe it's church. That we're not taking the time to remind them that they don't need a like. They need to be cool for Christ. They need to be cool for Him,
right,
not for social media. So that's in us. That's why we love our students, because we need them, because we learn from them. Because I remember one time I was their age, and I was desperate for somebody to give attention. And when I found out that I was valuable, that I was enough, was a life changer for me. And that's why we love them, because we know that we need them, but also they need us.
Pastor Dwayne also asked us about how this ministry, how these students fit with the greater church, the greater church body today. And in all honesty, I know sometimes you can't really tell, but you know, our students at this age, when they're teenagers, they want to feel part of a body. They want to feel useful. Now, there's a difference between being used and being useful. I mean, we all know that. And they're still trying to understand that among many other things in life. But they do love that feeling of being useful, of being able to do something, and then someone saying, hey, you did a great job. If you weren't here, I might not have been able to do this. Thank you for doing that. And that's part of our youth group. They serve, you know, they'll come to Parents Night Out, they'll go to VBS, they'll serve. That all gives them a sense of belonging as well. You know, during my teenage years, I was active in service. That's when I started becoming active in service. And I would be in the music ministry, and I would do missions, and I was in volunteering. It defined who I am today. You know, Pastor Dwayne was being a little bit sarcastic. I know a lot of us caught that real quick. But how much of that do we do to our children and our students as they continue to grow? How many of us are telling them, persevere for that aim? How many of us are telling them, make sure you're in sports? How many of us are telling them, there's all of these things that you can miss church for, but there's not a lot of things that you can miss for church? I learned at Times Square Church that I don't live for myself, that I live for others, that God takes care of me, and he'll use people to do that. And that was an important thing for me to learn. And I think that our students need to learn that for tomorrow. And as Pastor Fabi said, they need to learn that today. And we need to teach them that. We need to show them by example. We need to reach in and touch each and every one of these students. We can't do, they can't do that on their own. They can't learn that on their own. They can't learn that by mistake. It all has to be on purpose. We want our students to grow, as Pastor Dwayne said, and I have this written down, into godly adults that love others. Isn't that a nation you want to live in? Isn't that a world you want to live in? Don't you want that in your neighborhood? Adults that love each other? Absolutely, I do. They're well on their way. Let's help them along. We talked about the recipe for love. I want to read from this book that we received at NYC. It's called Love Lived. I'm going to close out this with this text, and I'll hand it over to Fabi. It says, when you add all the ingredients of your youth group and mix them into the church, you get a new recipe for something different but still amazing. Also, when you mix the adults of your church with the youth group, a new and beautiful dish of love is created. The same is true if you add the right adults into the youth group. When you are mixed with the right people, you become a different person, a growing person, a mature person. That's the recipe for love. All by yourself, you will not be able to accomplish as much as you can when you work together with others in your church. Work together, mix it up, stir the pot, and follow the recipe for love. Try it, and you will taste and see that the Lord is good. Amen, church.
We're going to close just saying that we need you. We need you as a ministry. We need you as a pastor. We need you guys. We need parents, uncles, aunts, grandparents. We need a group of people that say yes to pray for our students, but not for our ministry in general, just to receive an email every week to say, these are the students that we're going to be praying this week. These are the prayer requests that we need you to be praying, crying out to the Lord so those can be answered. We need them. We need people that say, we don't have time to go to church. We don't have time. Oh, we don't feel comfortable to be in the youth area, but I like to pray. I can spend like 10, 20, 10, 30, whatever time that you want, specific praying for this ministry. And again, not in general. I'm talking about having a list of names in prayer requests that they are writing down every week. We also need more mentors. Right now, we are starting with a program that we start praying in May, the beginning of the year. And was to put a team together, a mentor, say every student in our ministry have a mentor, not only for a couple months, somebody that can walk beside them for the rest of their life. That means when they get married, when they have kids, they can send you a picture and say, hey, look, I just had a baby. Hey, look, I have another baby. Hey, I'm from my number 6. We want you to be part of their life, not only here, just for many, many years. We need you. Right now, we only have a number of 17 mentors. And for the last couple of Wednesdays, in our service, only in the youth service, not in general, just in the youth service, we're receiving 47 to 53 kids on Wednesday. What does that mean? At 17, they're not going to be able to help us to reach out just the group that are coming on Wednesday. And then this number is not the one that only come on Sundays, or the one that come 2 or 3 times a month. Or the one that only come for camp, because they're still part of this church. So we actually have a number of 95 students that they are come during the year. And we see them at least 3 or 4 times a year. So that means at least we need 95 adults to say, yes, I want to be a mentor. I'm not perfect. My family is not perfect. My marriage is not perfect. But I want to walk beside the students. I want to reach out. I want to send a text. I want to send a card for their birthdays. If they're playing any sport or they acting, I just want to go and sit there and they know that we are here. The church is there in school, in sport, at home, in their birthdays. There are a lot of students that the parents are not part of their family. So we need men that they can teach our students how to change a tire on the car. We need men in their life, in the life of their students, that they can teach you how to date a girl. How is the right way to treat a woman? We need women that they can tell our girls why we need to walk in a specific way. How much we value, like how much we worth. We need women that tell our girls, you're beautiful. You're awesome, you're perfect. You don't have to do things so you be accepted in a specific group. Also the boy thinks you're hot. No, you are already beautiful. So we need you. So as a youth pastor, we're here to say, please, contact us, send a text, an email, talk to us. I know kids freak me out, and maybe teenagers freak you up, but it's okay. Just pray for them. Let us know that you want to be prayed for them. Let us know that you're willing to move a little bit to a site that maybe is not so comfortable for you, but just to show them that there's hope. We want our students to know it can be possible to have a family. They're divorced or single moms. They don't have to be all the time like that. We want to build a generation that can believe their mom and dad and kids, it's okay. They're at Christmas with a family, full family, it's okay. And because of that, we need you. I don't mean to put you sad. I don't mean to make you feel bad. I'm just with my heart completely open to say, please. Because we don't know for how long we're going to be here. We don't know for how long God is going to tell us this is the place that you need to be. But for many years, even if it's 2, 3, 10, 20 years, imagine probably with 20 more years being here with the youth, I don't know, but what? We don't ever know. But no matter who is here, who is working with the youth, we want to just remind you that we need you, our teenagers, our college students. They need you. We have a lot of college students that are by themselves here in Orlando. And sometimes when it's Christmas, when it's their birthday, when it's Thanksgiving, they don't have a place to go. And that's sad. So we want to be that family for them. God bless you, and we love you very, very much.